Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Guardian.
On Saturday, 6th January, the former editor of The Guardian and a dear friend to many of his colleagues, Peter Preston, died, aged 79.
There will be nothing flicking on the screen behind me, and there will be a conclusion at the beginning.
Peter was one of the finest journalists of his generation. He edited the paper for 20 years and played a decisive role in shaping The Guardian as we know it today.
And it's simply to say that there are no conclusions.
It was within 2 years of his editorship that, in 1977, Peter oversaw a very special report on the islands of Sansarif, which was published on April the 1st of that year. Our producer, Max Sanderson, interviewed Peter about this very special report in 2014 for his Humania podcast. I'm Tim Radford. Welcome to Sansarif.
It was a floating island, slightly like New Zealand, with the North Island and the South Island. It's difficult, actually. They started off floating, I think, off Africa, and then there was a bit of a plane crash in that part of the world a few days before the supplement was due. So the islands floated over to the other side of Africa. Stuart Legg's idea was that it should all be used in terms of the quite baroque terms for print that were used in newspapers. The two islands, North Island was called uppercase and the bottom one was called lowercase. And the island was ruled by General Piker being a lump of lead, anyway, that you put in, and his family, and they spoke Bodoni, and there was all sorts of... It was carried to the ultimate extreme, and I thought it was terrific. Said The Guardian at that stage was extraordinarily hard up, and I was in my 30s and had only recently been made editor, so we were struggling along on all sorts of fours. And there was a bright guy in the advertising department called Philip Davis, whose job it was to think up special reports, which were the sort of umpteen pages of stuff looking at things that you wouldn't normally look at in a great deal of detail, like the sort of 97 pages on Nigerians' development or something like that. Remember when I first joined The Guardian, before that, the first thinking, oh, how fantastic, the legacy of C.P. Scott. The first thing I was asked to have a look at was a report which was entitled A New Industry Comes to South Lancashire, which is actually the Golden Wonder Crisp factory opening up in Runcorn. So there wasn't a tremendously high bar for any of this. Anyway, Philip who probably wasn't the sort of person that C.P. Scott would have clutched to his bosom, had the idea of doing a spoof special report on April the 1st, which he came to me with, and I thought that was not a bad idea. And it rapidly became clear that if he got a good idea, then you could get a lot of advertisers to join in. And Geoffrey Taylor, who was the rather austere, not austere, but a sort of laid-back former foreign editor, now chief leader writer, who had a terrific sense of humour, went away and talked with a few guys about this. Somebody, I think a man with a beard called Stuart Legg, suggested that we could do something on a mythical island special report. Geoffrey picked that all up. And so in a sort of committee sense, Sans Serif, or as the islanders call it, Sans Serife, was invented. It followed the sort of the lines of a normal special report. You had the history of Sans Serif, you had the political, you had profiles of the political leaders who all magically turned out to be a member of General Piker's family. You had the cultural side of Sans Serif, the educational side. You had the whole thing blocked together, what they eat, and written at two levels. So at first glance, it's not clear that anybody sort of staggering out of bed, reaching for a cup of tea over the breakfast table and looking at this would have quite clued up. The penny would have dropped. But it was there. Well, anyway, it was in the paper, April the 1st. Nobody said anything for a bit. And then at home, my phone started to ring and the spirit said, "What's this? Is this a joke?" And I said, "Well, just go away and read it carefully and form your own views." Got into the office. The office was swamped with telephone calls of people saying, "Is this a joke? Can we go there?" Travel agents ringing up to say, because we described what a wonderful place it was to go to. People had read it and decided that the travel agent do holidays there. There was a huge sort of, which is always the greatest thing, the BBC, God bless it, picked it up and we had a very good sales day. Other papers picked it up and said that it was either very trivial and demeaning or a terrific joke. And there we were. What I hadn't expected was that it would become, as I think it has to an extent, for people who are around at the time, an almost iconic joke. Everybody remembers it, who was there at the time, who was taken in by it, or who knew somebody who was taken in by it, or worked on it, or read it, or felt the impact. It was very, very good for The Guardian. But apart from that, it sort of established a benchmark for April Fool jokes in newspapers.
To me, it represents, you know, sometimes you just need something to light up the day. Do you think it sort of reflects that human need for having a bit of a laugh and a joke in the face of, say, adversity?
Oh, golly. I mean, if you're looking at any TV news, radio news, or front page of most serious newspapers most of the time, the diet of gloom is fairly oppressive. If you're looking back to 1977, we didn't have the Guardian, the Times and so forth, didn't have too much truck with celebrities falling in and out of bed with each other, and this has come on over the last few decades. So it was very difficult to have a lightning effect, and you could get into a terribly sort of, be thought of as terribly pompous. There you were, one minute writing a leader saying, "It is high time that the government of Mongolia pulled itself together." And it was a sort of British waistcoated editor men's club sort of world. And The Guardian isn't like that, wasn't like that. We had a lot of laughs. I'm sure they do still have a lot of laughs. And it seemed absolutely crazy to me not to actually reflect that, because if you go through life without having the chance to be surprised by something really good to laugh over, then it's like sitting through an endless reel of 12 Years a Slave and praying that at some stage somebody will crack a joke just to lighten the mood. So there we go.
Sans-serif was invented at high speed, in secrecy, and with the barest minimum of consultations by a group of scribes, each of whom knew almost nothing about the contributions of others. My role was to describe complex and somewhat eccentric cultural preoccupations of the islanders, including, but please do not ask me to explain this, the cult of the sonorous enigma. It was the single most ambitious, far-reaching and enduring, but essentially haphazard newspaper jest I can think of. Our readers loved it so intensely and with such commitment that by the time I got into the office, and I was letters editor at the time, so I was the first to see it, we had received a formal protest from the Sans-Serif Liberation Front on headed notepaper, objecting to its omission from the history. The Times carried a story about our April foolery, and the BBC Morning News programme interviewed a spokesman for General Piker. An American who was due to be deported by the Home Secretary threw the Foreign Office into confusion by demanding he be flown to Sans-Serif. It was a hell of a thing to have been involved in, and perfectly captures Peter's enduring mission to expand the journalistic horizons of The Guardian, to take risks, to delight the readers, to challenge expectations, and above all, to make people think. And I'm glad to say nothing much has changed. This special episode of The Story featured the Sans-Serif episode of the Humania podcast. The voice you heard was Peter Preston's, and the piece was originally produced by Max Sanderson. This repost featured me, Tim Radford, and was produced for The Guardian by Max Sanderson.
Great podcasts from The Guardian. Just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.